Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran. I want to welcome you today. We've got a great show lined up for you. We've got the CEO of Spreaker on, and he's been on a couple times before. We're going to talk with Francesco this morning, and of course, I want to welcome my co-host, Mr. Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Doing great, Todd. It's great to be here. It's fantastic that we have Spreaker on the show. I think they're doing some great stuff, and it should be a really enlightening, I think, conversation this morning. So, and we're back to our normal day and time, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it is. And, it's been one of those weeks, Rob, that it's just like, it's Saturday already. I'm not kidding. I think it was because I was so busy. I'm looking at the studio here, and thank God you can only see from like this area over, because everything is a disaster area.
I've got a little bit of that going on here too. I was like thinking, I gotta straighten all this stuff up. There's too many business cards and too many things going
on.
Yeah.
It's just like, what happened? What tornado came through here? But anyway, I digress. It's beautiful here in Honolulu. I was just telling Francesco, we had some weird weather with I guess for better words, they call it unpredictable thunder fuel cells or something. Anyway, like dumps on you, then it sunshines. So it's just weird. Anyway, but
well, that's Hawaii. It's like a passing cloud, right?
Yeah,
it rains on you, and then it's warm and sunny right after that. I'm sure
it's just a little more weird than normal. But
is it?
Go ahead.
Oh, I think everybody's getting weird weather right now. You know, it's like spring has come about a month early here to the Northwest. So all the trees and flowers are blooming, and it's like just, you know, it's still the end of February. So it's kind of weird.
My solar system, though, I'm really happy. I've been watching the progress of, the back and forth with the energy creation. And I'm actually like 150 kilowatts lower than when I had the system installed in December. So we're making power, which is good. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah, the 1995 interconnection bill is the best thing. That to me is, you know. So yeah, we're powered by the sun here in the studio. But anyway, so let's I've yacked enough here. We got a bunch of people in the chat room. They've just jumped in. Thanks guys for coming in. Daniel, Dan, I got two Dans, Daniel and a Dan, and Michael Delt, Lisa Farr, good morning. And so what's new at Francesco? First of all, we're completely ignoring you. Good morning. So
good morning, guys.
And it's actually afternoon for you, your evening.
It's evening. It's 6 p.m. here. I'm in Berlin. This is actually my last week in Berlin. I'm moving myself. I'm going back to Italy at the end of next week. And here it's dusk. It's been a pleasant and beautiful day, probably not as warm as Honolulu, but we'll do. I went around and had a bit of shopping with my girlfriend. It's been a pleasant Saturday already. And it's good to be back, actually. This is my third time, so I'm loosening up as a guest on the show.
So you're moving back to Italy. Are you making that move permanent then? Are you going to be commuting back and forth to the office there?
Well, it's not permanent because I'm still deciding. We'll definitely keep the office here. A lot of people that were working for us have decided to go digital nomads right now. we actually think this is a plus for our company. So, a couple of my colleagues, one is actually one of my co-founders, are now in Spain enjoying and actually basking in the sun, and I'm super jealous. So I wanted to enjoy some sun myself.
Well, you know, we've been, when we first built our company too, we were digital nomads, and most of the team is still spread out. We have an office with people in it in Columbus, Ohio, but the rest of the team is, digitally spread. So the model works. It's just it's the way it is these days. You know, as long as you can keep people on task, it's a great way to live life, to be honest with you.
Oh, it's great. I mean, we've been having people spread out since inception. And, at some point, the vast majority of our people were here in Berlin, but there were always like two or three people still in Italy working from remote. And then it all changed. And then at some point, we figured out that I was sending emails or Skype messages or Slack messaging to my coworkers in the same office. And so, well, you realize it's not that different. It's
right. And when someone texts you from the next cubicle over, you know that. So, you know, Rob sent me some topic points today, some things we want to cover with you. But one thing that I noticed that was on Rob's list is that you guys have been on the growth spurt here. You guys are over 25,000 podcasts on the site now.
Yeah, that the number is actually the number of active podcasters on a monthly basis. Yeah, it's I mean, it's huge. There's a turnover into podcasters. We get a lot of new people trying and do shows on every month, and then they give up, like bloggers, and but new ones come on board. But this number has been at between 25 to 30,000 pretty steadily around the last 12 months, probably. And that's what we have. We have, of course, a lot of episodes and a lot of podcasts, but that's basically the size of our podcasters community right now.
You know, that
it's a good size. It's a good size community.
I mean, it definitely is.
You know, and it's interesting too, the burn rate on shows. You know, it's I don't think that's much changed in 10 years. I think shows are, you know, they come on and they try and they figure out it's hard work, or they get discouraged because maybe they're not building an audience as fast as they are, and they just give up. But, you know, I've never really done huge exit surveys of usually when podcasters leave, they're gone. You know, it's like you can't even get an access to them. But it'd be interesting to maybe at some point, Rob, and maybe us as a, together as a community can come up with do some sort of a survey that basically say what made you quit. You know, why did you quit? And kind of understand that a little better.
Yeah, I think, Todd, there is a pattern there that is consistent across podcasters and listeners, too. Because, you know, back in the days, you know, I was working at Zune, I saw a lot of listener turnover, too. It was like people were subscribing, unsubscribing. You know, it's like half of people's subscriptions would be cycled through every, you know, like every month or because people were trying new stuff all the time. And I think, you know, to a certain extent, podcasting is similar to that. It's people jump in because they have an idea, and they, just like you said, they realize after about seven episodes that they've either don't have anything more to say, or they don't have any more time to do it, or it just slips their mind and they miss an episode, and then another week goes by and they miss another one, and they just say, you know, I'm done now. So it's really just the nature of how serious you are about it. And just like you've always said, Todd, it's how easy you make it to produce the content too.
Yeah.
And I think Spreaker is an example of trying to make the production of content easier.
Yeah, that's right. But on the other hand, you see, I mean, huge drop-off rates just because you're making this easier. A lot of people just try. It's like blogging platforms. I keep saying this to myself whenever I see our figures. I mean, I think I've started blogging in the last 10 years, probably four or five times. And rarely I've gone beyond the second post. And it's probably what's happening with our platform. On every given month, we have like a few thousand guys. Last month, it was like more than 10,000 new people trying to do this. And 50% of these people just give up after 1 month. And then there's another huge drop-off rate at month two, and then it goes pretty steady. I mean, if you can, that's what we see. If you can commit more than 2 months, then it goes for the long run. And other things might kick in. I mean, you might stop at some point if you see that your show is not successful. But the first 2 months are just, okay, I'm just testing this. And after 2 months, you're serious about this. You're committed.
You know, I think I've seen, and I haven't run these numbers in a while. Because, seven seems to be the number that I always have talked about. And every time we've run stuff, but like, you know, it's you know, if they make it to show seven, then they'll usually, you know, you lose half of them by show seven, and then by show 20 to 25, you lose another half of what was remained from that initial group, and then usually 2 years. And at 2 year mark, we really see another drop. And I think people say, okay, I'm going to commit to this to a certain amount of time, but I don't get the traction I need in that. You know, those, and then very, 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 very few shows have really made it for the long haul. Rob, I can probably on, you know, probably two hands count the number of shows that started back in, you know, maybe October of the, around the time I did, and have made it 10 years. There's, you know, there's not a lot. So, you know, 2 to 3 years is a pretty good run for, for a show.
Yeah, I did mine for about 6 years, you know, on the radio and as a podcast. So, yeah, I mean, I just got to a point where the show just wasn't as relevant, to what was happening in the world. And we kind of burned out from doing it, you know, it's kind of what it came down to. And that was moving on to working more behind the scenes, in the podcasting area. So, yeah, I mean, life situations change, and you know, it doesn't make sense to continue. Also, it's what happens.
There was one topic in this list, Rob, that you sent over that is going to be of huge interest to maybe even some of the folks in the chat room right now. It's the topic about the Twitter bombing. And obviously, Francesco, you guys have seen some issues, and we've seen a lot of issues. And I'd really love to hear your take on what you guys are seeing in the ever expanding, how should we say it, ways to figure out how to pump your numbers.
Well, we had a couple of guys actually on the platform being, I mean, very, very aggressive with Twitter bombing, to the point where these people were inflating their figures probably, I think, 1,000x. I'm not exaggerating. Yeah, some of these guys went from doing, I don't know, like a couple of thousand plays a month up to probably 1 million of plays / downloads a month. We have both way to count the number of plays. So we also have streaming. So we call streaming plays, and we have downloads, and we report them separately to the host. But to the listeners, I mean, to the people that show that figure, it's a single number. So they say, okay, well, 5 million plays, that's a huge number, or 10 million plays, and so on. And yeah, a couple of guys were really, really aggressive with this. Usual stuff, like having a number of interconnected Twitter accounts, tweeting every 60 seconds, links, direct media links to the files to be downloaded. And some also the patterns of downloads were kind of varying erratically, because sometimes these links were picked up by bots in a more aggressive way, sometimes less aggressive. And by less aggressive, I mean there were a bit more humans than the huge percentage of bots that was there. So it was kind of annoying for the two usual reasons. First, of course, there's a kind of a cost issue and service issue. I mean, having terabytes of downloads made by machines is something that no one likes. And but I think that the most serious issue here was the fact that they were kind of probably making a bad thing and destroying numbers for the whole community. Because it was obvious to us that these were fake numbers, but these guys were definitely trying to sell these figures to their advertisers, and we know that this was not going to end up well. So we actually wanted to stop this and to put a period or a full stop to this behavior. And so we acted. And I don't know if I should go on. I mean, tell me your story.
Francesco, just, you know, don't say the names of the shows, but please, you know, go ahead and did you boot them, or did you, you know, can you say what you did?
Well, at the beginning, I mean, this dates back to 3 or 4 months ago. We just got in touch with these users and told them, hey, you know, this is not just frowned upon, but I mean, really probably going to be banned. I know it's not true, but we were kind of aggressive our way. This is going to be banned by the whole podcasting community, so please stop doing that. Second, then at some point we just decided we had to act. And the good thing about our platform is that, as I said before, we also have a streaming player, So what we basically did was we got all the download requests that were coming from suspicious sources, which we basically we whitelisted iTunes, the usual podcatchers, and other another client application that we were kind of sure that they were legit. We inserted a rate limiter to the download API on each user. And this rate limiter constantly monitors the download activity. And when there are spikes, which they usually come from Twitter bombing, we just got a flag. And when we have a flag, we just go manually check on Twitter if these guys are doing Twitter bombing. And if that is the case, we actually turn on a different behavior. So the media links that they are tweeting actually, for all the sources that are not whitelisted, redirect back to the player page. So it's like starting a captcha, you know? These guys now, if there are real listeners on the other side, they will see a big play button, and at least they will have to play to push the play button in order to listen to the stream. And so we thought this was a good approach because it's not breaking the service for real humans. I mean, the probably 2 or 3% of real humans that are among the people that are really interested in listening to those episodes, but it totally stopped the bots from accessing the media and increasing the play count, and it worked. It really worked.
And my bet is that they went somewhere else, because here's what you know. You know,
the people are the bots.
The people. We have had, you know, we've been watching this for a long time. And what's funny is, in kind of our approach was not necessarily the same, but what we did was, you know, when you have this wide body of data, these guys stick out like a sore thumb. It's just like, boop, boop. It's just like this light bulb going off, you know? It's like, what's going on here? And so, you know, we've really made some fundamental changes within, and I really don't even want to say what we did, because
always countermeasures.
There's
right?
always countermeasures, and people will be listening.
Really, yeah, and I understand, but I think the real issue here is measuring.
Yeah,
I mean, the whole problem rises because of the way today we measure audience on podcast, and this is probably another interesting topic for today's show. But you know, the whole podcasting ecosystem is made by a number of providers and apps and players, and historically, and as of even as of today, measurement is made on the server side because it's basically impossible to collect all this information on the client side, and you can easily you can easily trick measurements made on the server side this way and many other ways that come to my mind easily. So I think that this is an issue that we cannot solve as platform providers until we move this kind of measurement on the client side. So seeing if there's really someone there listening and consuming stuff, and it would be highly beneficial also for another number of reasons. I mean, you can also understand the listening patterns of users when you move measurement at the client side. But this is a long, it requires a lot of time. It's like a long story, or it's a long process.
Well, you know, we've been at this for 10 years on 9 years on the stats side. And we've learned over that period of time, some things are given that are still hold true to the measurement. And I'm not afraid to say that luckily there's only a few small percentage of podcasters that are doing these type of techniques, and usually they're easy to smell out. So for most part, the majority of the podcasting space plays fair. The filtering you have to do, irregardless of people that are Twitter bombing, the filtering you have to do is considerable, because as you guys have seen as well, the bot activity, you know, if you don't even filter the bot activity, you can have many multiples of downloads that should not be counted. And but I think if you want to take this back to the client side, you know, obviously you can track the plays in a player, you can track players in apps. You know, there's a lot of things you can do. Hang on a second.
Yeah, I think where we're missing the data is the podcasts that are downloaded.
Well, you know,
later, right?
Yeah,
that's the missing data.
Yeah, and Apple will probably never give us that data. You know, they give some data to their, you know, their partners, but that data is still not what you need from a reporting standpoint. I don't know if we'll ever get to the point where all the client data will be there. And if they do, then there'll be some people that's going to figure out how to tweak the client down, you know, the client reporting too. So it's just as someone said in the chat room, it's a whack-a-mole type thing that continues that we have to continue to watch. I don't know. I'm pretty confident in the filtering. I wouldn't say that if I wasn't. But it does take, you know, it's, you have to be on it all the time. It's a full-time thing to be able to watch stuff. And usually it's not bad characters doing bad stuff. It's usually software, you know, and it's, you know, someone's a scraper or it's someone's, you know, we just had something pop up this morning. Someone's doing something where they're running Cast Validator feed request and, you know, and then pinging all the media inside to make sure it's all there. And if they find an error, they're using that as a business tactic to send them an email saying, hey, something's wrong with your feed or something's wrong with your... So it's basically causing all of a sudden Cast Validator to spike in where it shouldn't be. You know, it's like something you'd use like maybe once a month. All of a sudden, it's getting hit 5 times a day by some bot. So, you know, it'll never end, I don't think.
I agree. It's a never-ending battle. But I also think, I mean, we need to go to the source of it. I mean, why are these guys inflating their stats? and because they, I mean, what are these guys gaining from that? I mean, so far, we all know that there was not that much money into this industry. Now money is about to start flowing, and we want it to keep flowing, right?
Right.
And I mean, it takes very, very little to ruin the reputation of the whole industry, and I really fear that these guys might do it. So okay, we always need to be checking and guard, and also we need to do whatever possible to show the advertisers that they're getting a return on their investment. And I think also for this, moving the measurement a little bit more on the client side is useful. I mean, we are doing something on the client side, so maybe it might appear that I'm saying something of this for our advantage, but of course the big gorilla and the 800 pounds gorilla in this room here is Apple, and they kind of need to start opening their stats. They're 70% of the market. That's where we have to get the data. And if they start reporting that, I mean, who cares about the remaining 30%? Are you ever going to believe that a show that makes, I don't know, 1,000 plays on the Apple podcast application is doing 2 or 3 million in the same time frame somewhere else? That's basically impossible.
Exactly.
So I think they will stop. There's no point when...
That's true.
Sorry, please go ahead.
Well, no, that's true, and I agree with you. But at the same time, there are podcasters making inroads on other platforms, and platforms are growing. But even though until something dramatically changes, Apple's going to have the majority of the traffic. But I think we've got a pretty good handle on the Apple traffic. You know, there's still the question remains when person downloads it, have they actually listened? And until Apple starts sending that back, that's going to be an unknown, but there's other ways to mitigate that to a certain extent. You know, I want to go back to a point that you talked about. Why are these guys doing it? Number one, I think part of it's ego. Number two, we have a certain class of podcasters that have come on board that are trying to build personal reputation and sell their personal services, whether it be some sort of business offering, some sort of how-to, claiming to be some sort of an expert. They're trying to build reputation. You know, I think those are the reasons. And it's a certain class of content creators that we've seen come on board that are getting instruction from people that, you know, I've been staying for a while and I've taken major heat, major blistering heat from certain segments of the community that when I say it's wrong, and they're like defensive, it's not wrong. And I personally get tired of getting beat up about it. So, and it's not good for my business necessarily to be calling people out. So we filter, and I deal with it on that side. I can absolutely guarantee you that the abusers are not using my stat system for an obvious reason. Yeah, because we're being very, very aggressive about dealing with this stuff. Yeah. So they go someplace where, or they make up their own number.
Well, I think that we're definitely in a time where people are valuing bigger numbers more and more.
Yeah.
And I think as the brand advertisers come into this space, which kind of, there was another article that came out talking about, you know, the brand advertisers are not yet here. I would say that they're definitely coming in and becoming a bigger presence. It's happening. It's not something in the future, but I think that's also behind what's going on with this Twitter bombing thing too, is that there's increasing pressure for a show to be much bigger. And cause there's dollar signs there. And I think that the danger is that people are going to try and cheat their way to that, just like what they did back in the early days with search engines, of trying to do these, you know, these scammy kind of search engine optimization techniques. I think it's just the nature of the internet to try and game the system. And
Rob,
I think,
same crowd.
Yep, it's the same thing. You know, it's just a different medium and a different way of doing it. You know, just like you guys are saying, you know, it's bad for the industry, just like it was bad for the search engines, you know. So,
well, and what it's going to do is someone's going to end up writing a big check back to a media buyer when they get called on it and get audited.
Yep.
I can't tell you the number of audits I've had to do over the past 5 years where an advertiser said, "Well, Nelly, we work with the, you know, show ABC, and I'm like, well, I don't have any information on show ABC. And then they demand an audit. And I don't want to be the one that has to write the check back to the advertiser and explain to them. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be the show nor the service, you know, that writes a check back to an advertiser and have egg on my face. That to me would be the absolute, that's worse than, you know, just stick a knife in my heart. You know, I just can't imagine it. I really can't. You know, and I think if podcast, you know, and I hate to bring up, I've said for years and years, I don't care what the number is, as long as I know what the number is. You know, and if podcasters can just get over the fact that they have to do hard work to build a show, and they have to produce great content, and they have to use social media responsibly, and if they get that through their heads and put the time in, if they work as hard at doing their show as they are at trying to inflating numbers, they would probably have a successful show. It's aggravating. And I think who's going to get in trouble with this, though, are the auto insertion folks. You know, because if you have this type of bot activity going on and you have a system that is auto inserting ads, and that has no way to know not to insert an ad there, that's going to be trouble. Now, what we mostly see is that they take a nibble of the file. They don't necessarily download the whole thing. There's a certain portion that do, but there's a portion of them that just take a nibble of the file. And some of the auto insertion folks are, even if they just taken a nibble, they ding, they count it as a one, mm-hmm. because they're counting on the, you know, they're counting on
the request.
The request.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't count on the request in most cases. So it's, you know, that's the challenge that the auto insertion folks are going to have to learn. Oh, that was a bot. I shouldn't count that.
And I think that the auto insertion issue is becoming more and more important, especially as you move into brand advertising.
For big shows.
For big shows. Yep.
Auto insertion will never affect 90% of the podcasters out there. Will never have an impact.
Yeah.
Maybe even 95%.
Yeah. I mean, Todd, it could. You know, I mean, if this gets to a point where auto insertion of spots can be automated across a large number of shows, I think it's possible.
It's possible, but there's a cost factor there too.
There is, yes.
So, you know, you get a bunch of people in the chat room, Francesco, that is like, "Oh, that was a good way to deal with it," and you know, they're talking about it. So what was the response? Did you get a response from these Yahoos that were doing this activity?
Actually, we did. I wrote all of these guys a personal email trying to explain what we did and that we were actually trying to stop bots and telling them we cannot stop you from trying and game us. And actually, this is not officially forbidden so far, but we'll do whatever it takes to avoid bots coming to our website and browsing this content, because that is in our terms and condition. And they actually apologized, and they told me actually that they were going to change the way they promote and advertise their show. So it kind of worked. I have to say, as I said at the beginning, there were just two people on the whole platform, like really heavily doing this. And but I got back to them with data and said, hey, listen, so first of all, let's take these 2 days. So a lot of the requests that were coming to your media were with a user agent called TwitterBot or something like that. Do you think this is legit? No. So we immediately filtered that, and we don't even serve the content. We just bounce these guys to the show page, and if someone by any chance happens to be a real human, which is not, he just has to push the play button. And then we noticed that a lot of bots were impersonating browsers. So
right.
We had a lot of bots impersonating Chrome or Internet Explorer or Firefox. So when you hit the threshold limit, we just bounce you to the page. And we told them the reason we did so is that, okay, we are sure that more than 50 or even 60% of the remaining traffic is bots impersonating browsers. What about the other 40%? Well, these might be humans, but if you take a sample of for how long these guys download your content,
right?
I mean, no, the average is probably 30 to 35 seconds worth of data content. So you're actually masking your links or hiding, telling people you're talking about something else. They are on their mobile, they click on the link, and boom, an audio player, like an embedded audio player, the HTML5 audio player embedded in Twitter, comes up and starts playing something, so they probably hit the back button, and they haven't consumed your audio anyway. And these guys don't come back to your show. I mean, is this what you want? And they apologize, and they stopped doing it.
So it goes back to what I said earlier, Rob, small percentage of abusers.
Yeah. Yeah, it always is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the small group that makes all the problems.
But in most cases, though, most people play by the rules.
Yeah, that's right.
And I shouldn't say rules, because there really is no rules, but you know, they play,
doing the right thing here and
they play fair.
Being good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, I have to, you know, and I get beat up. My team tells me to be quiet, and rightly so. Then there are times I have to, you know, bite my thumb and
you want to say
you, I really want to say something, you know, but I yeah, I cannot, you know, and it really, what it goes back down to is then it was good that they responded and apologized. And you know, the question that I wish you would have asked, Francesco, is who told them to do that? You know, who taught them to do that? And we need to get to the source of who's teaching these bag techniques, and just tell them as a community, stop doing this. You're going to cause irreparable harm if you continue.
Well, Todd, if you go back to how that all happened with the search engines, you know, kind of optimization, spamming and things, it was always kind of a people in the space kind of see what others are doing and then try and copy it. And, and then small groups kind of share techniques, right? And it just kind of spreads word of mouth is usually how it happens. And it's probably not going to be on any blog or any public forum. It's going to be just, you know, person-to-person communication.
Well, I be careful. I'll be careful here. Yeah. There were some mastermind groups, let me just say up front that most mastermind groups are probably very good and do a great job and have a great community and share good information. But there were some mastermind groups that were about techniques, and I was shared information, and these people had paid thousands of dollars to be on these groups. So I had been shared information that, you know, I've kept close to vest, and you know, the people in those groups kind of self-police themselves by going, that wasn't such a good idea. And then they would, like, I'd get an email, did you know this is going on? And you know, it's amazing how many people that are participating in those groups will actually, for a better word, dime the group out. So, you know, if we could, and you know, at some point, I'm sure a lot of this will become more public, and after people get mad that they've spent the money and then they have caused themselves harm, they're going to, you know, after they get over their pride being hurt, because once you spend a lot of money, most people are not willing to say, oh, that was stupid, I shouldn't have done that, and then willing to talk about it. But at some point, when people kind of, their pride gets to the point where, okay, now it turns to anger, then we'll start seeing stuff in public forums. And we have a little bit already, but not a lot.
Well, and Todd, I think this whole conversation kind of dovetails to filtering and metrics and things like that. And it might be good to give maybe an update on where the IAB is and their working group and kind of what the plan is going forward with that.
The next planned meeting is of the digital talking heads, basically, the Angelos, of course, Angelo's my CEO. He's the one that maintains the filter and the white light, basically all the stuff that goes into our stats. And it would be Francesco, whoever was at your group. But it's all the AdWiz and the Triton and the Libsyn, and all those folks are going to basically get locked into a hotel room or into a suite or a meeting room, and they're going to just kind of talk it through. And they,
that's supposed to happen on the 12th or the 13th.
It's
April,
on Monday. They've slid it to Monday. The
12th.
Yeah. April. Yeah, April. No, they slid to 13th. It's on Monday the 13th.
Okay.
So I don't know. I wish they wouldn't have done it that day. But anyway, I think what's going to happen is that these guys all know. And it's they're not stupid. They're all very, very smart people. So I think they're going to get in there. And we are, you know, us personally, Raw Voice, we know what Libsyn and what Podtrac does. And I'm not at all expecting anything weird to come out of either Mark's team or Rob's team's mouth. I don't expect any weird things. there'll probably be some contention in the room with some other groups, but it's basically those segments of folks are going to talk, and they're basically going to, I don't know if they're going to come up with, because no one's going to really change too much, but there'll probably be some best practices and terms. I think terms are going to be settled upon.
I
think it'll give everyone a, you know, I've got a pretty warm and fuzzy with a certain number of segments of the space. There's just a few rogue characters out there.
Well, I think it, I mean, a lot of the foundation of this going into that meeting is coming out of the original, you know, the Association of Downloadable Media that formed some basic tenets back in, what, 2009. But, you know, so I think, you know, I'm hopeful that what gets put up there in this meeting will be an outline of the practices that are happening today, what people are doing today, and just getting more people on board with that. Maybe there's some improvements and some tweaks that one group is doing over another group that maybe can be shared across all these platforms to get everybody on the same page. So when we go into an advertiser or whatever, it's all using the same kind of metric tracking concepts. I think where the difference could come in is where survey data gets integrated into this ecosystem. Because I think that there's going to be certain segments of the business community that are really coming out of the radio side or the streaming radio side that are going to want to appeal and have metrics that speak to the radio side of the buying community. And I think that's where there's a difference, you know, that is coming out of the past and kind of moving into the future. And how do we kind of integrate those needs, and what does that look like? I think is really where what needs to be kind of worked out so everybody's on the same page, because there's a lot of new companies moving into the space that are coming out of the radio industry and the streaming music side that are going to look at this quite differently, and maybe many of those may not even be doing downloads.
Well, so, here's the thing, Rob. Those radio guys need to grow up. It's a digital world. This is digital media. This isn't over the air. It's not hocus pocus. Yep. It's not some survey data that's sent to a guy that fills a little card out what he does. It's all in a digital log file. So the survey folks can say everything they want, but in the end, it's digital. And I understand where you're coming from, and I understand the wants and needs. Wanting is all cool, but we're in a digital space. And, you know, survey all you want. It doesn't get you more listeners on a bill that you send to a media buyer when the unique number of downloads were, let's say, 1 million. There's no way that can translate into a $6 million download invoice that goes to a media buyer. It's zeros and ones. It's not some guy filling out a survey on a, you know, I'm
well,
just...
I mean, Todd, I think if you look at who's getting involved in this, it goes back to, you know, the big historical measurement players from the radio space. You know, you have Triton, you have Nielsen, and you have the Edison folks. The Edison folks have been involved in podcasting for a very long time.
Well,
the Nielsen folks are just kind of getting involved, and Triton has been doing ad injection and metrics in the streaming radio side for a long time, and they're all jumping into the fray right now. So how are they going to tweak what they do that's built on their past and translate it in the future when they think that it's very similar, right? I think that's at the core, and a lot of this stuff that I'm talking about right here really doesn't get talked publicly very much about what's happening in the space right now.
But the thing is, again, I go back to just, let's look at it from a layman's terms. Let's not think about the big picture.
Yeah.
Someone clicks a download. It goes out to a server. It pulls a log file in an Apache log file that was made. There's a log entry. That happened. Now, I get the media. I'm not sharing that, sending that over to five or six people. It's coming to me. They're going to have to, surveys are great for finding out who the audience is, depending on how often they, well, we can even know how often they listen now based on digital data, how long they listen, you know, all that's, you know, all that demo stuff. But when it comes to reporting on a bill I'm going to send to a media buyer, call me a doubting Thomas. It doesn't, you know, they're going to try.
Well, Todd, so how do you see the translation happening for radio buyers? If you think about downloads versus impressions,
they're already, they're already taking, you know, the key is an impression is a web load. You cannot use use the word impression is so misleading. I hate that word being used in the podcasting space. I really do. It makes my skin crawl when I hear it, because an impression is digital speak of a banner impression. Banner impression can be above the fold or below the fold. It could be seen or not seen. When you actually are in, you know, listening, you're doing an action there to actually, you know, create a paper trail that is, you know, showing that something has actually happened.
Todd, the radio buyers buy impressions, though. They don't buy downloads.
No, they don't. They buy downloads.
Well,
they, from me, they are buying from me. Okay, well, guess what? Then they're being ripped off. If they are buying impressions, they are being ripped. If I counted every impression of a media, Francesco, what do you think the percentages of stuff that you guys filter right now? What do you think the number of, if there was if you had a legitimate 1,000 plays and downloads, what do you think is the total number of stuff that you have to filter that would, if you didn't have a filter, would be improperly counted?
I'm sorry, Todd.
So
the wrong moment. Yeah. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. So, for example, what is the percentage of stuff that you have to filter out right now? What is the number of impressions or in downloads that you guys are throwing away? Basically, you're not putting in on the counter board.
Yeah, I think we've got some bandwidth issues with.
Yeah, his video stopped. Oh, horrible time for that to happen.
There's never a good time. Todd, I think I think we're tapping into what the core of the, I guess, you know, I hate to use the word issue coming into this.
It's only an issue for a few.
Yes. No, agreed. But unfortunately, those few are pretty big players on the radio side. And I think they're going to want to throw their weight around.
Well, they can throw it around.
Yeah. And that's just,
does it make it right? No,
it doesn't. No. I mean, you know, if they're going to play in the podcasting space, they need to play in the podcasting space,
right,
not play in the space that they've been playing in for the last, you know, 30 years or 20 years. Or, I mean, some of these companies have been doing what they're doing for a very long time. And a lot of them are built on their legacy business models.
Yeah.
And they're trying to take their legacy business models and translate them into this medium as a business opportunity. And you know, they can try. They can do what they have to do. But, you know, they're going to get some resistance.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it's going to go down. Who's going to have more power in the space? The people have been around in the space for 10 years or people that are just jumping in the last 6 months.
Let's ask Francesco the question again. So we were talking about, essentially the question was on filtering in the filtering you guys do, you know, in your stats that you guys have at Spreaker, what is the percentage of any, and I'm not asking you to put an exact number, but roughly how much of the stuff are you guys throwing out is invalid? What would you say the percentage is?
In the downloads, probably I would say 15 to 20%.
Okay.
It's for us, it's all good. So we actually full disclosure, we actually do more plays as streams than we do with downloads.
Oh.
And for that, that's mostly good for us. We only filter the bots and the downloads. And if we opened everything as of today, we probably get a 15 or 20% increase in the numbers that will show around. Yeah, which is not huge, but again, and it's huge because it's only a handful of people who generate all this this kind of traffic. But it's, I mean, it's quite a big number, 20%, like one every five or six impressions is actually made by a bot, would be made by a bot if we didn't filter it.
And I think our number is much higher than that from a filtering standpoint. I don't know the exact number. I have a number in my head, but I don't want to say it. But I think ours is much higher on the filtering side. But it's also, too, you know, we're not, you know, most of the shows that are, well, I'll just leave it at that. And maybe it's time for me to readdress that in an article or something on what the actual number is. But I think our filtering number is much higher. So, you know, it's, you know, and Rob was basically saying, how do the radio buyers come in and play in this space? Because they're used to using Nielsen surveys and, you know, this hypothetical audience sizes in a certain market. And, you know, it's, you know, that's what they had to use because they had no other way to do it. My argument is that we live in a digital space and it's made up of zeros and ones, and it's not, you know, on the whim of someone filling out a survey form or going into, you know, some hypothetical on a show on, you know, to build audience growth through a survey form.
Yeah, Todd, I just wanted to mention and in context, and then Francesco, you can jump in too, but you know, Francesco said that he has a lot more streaming players activity on Spreaker. And I think it's an interesting point from the standpoint of maybe a demographic, you know, based on just some things that I've seen with Spreaker, you know, like who the users are of Spreaker. And Francesco, jump in and clarify if I'm seeing something wrong here. But the impression that I've had is that Spreaker has a younger user base, which may account for that higher amount of streaming versus downloading. And is that correct, Francesco? Would you say that that's a correct observation compared to traditional podcasting?
I don't have a benchmark with traditional podcasting. I tend to think that our user base is actually older compared to the average user base of the internet, because audio and spoken word audio is more interesting for an older user base. But yeah, again, I mean, I don't have a benchmark on podcasting. And well, a few of our users are definitely probably younger than the typical listener of the NPR shows that you find on iTunes. Yeah, but I cannot answer the question basically, Rob, because I'm not aware of what the stats are in the traditional podcasting industry.
Todd,
what's the
typical age range for the vast majority of podcast listeners today that you see on your platform?
I think the bulk of it's 25 to 55.
Where's the big spike?
It's 30 to 55.
Okay.
And there's, you know, it's all stacked in there, but
yeah.
It definitely trends older, and it makes sense if you think about it. You know, my 23-year-old, she doesn't listen to talk radio. She doesn't. She listens to music. She still hang out with her friends. As she gets older, you know, I think. And I was talking with a guy from New York who was 26, from a very, very big agency last week, a creative agency. And so I'm asking him, what's going on in your office? Who's listening to podcasts? And he says, kind of my age group and above are listening to podcasts. The folks that are the new interns that are coming in, they said they're listening to Pandora and streaming music. So I was kind of surprised, and I'm like, that was the first time I'd actually heard like a 26-year-old tell me that, you know, he'd seen some of his peers listening. So, you know, maybe. And what it is, and I predicted this.
It's an age thing. Yeah.
It's an age thing, but we're also, I think, incrementally we'll shift left a little bit over time. We just have to, but the content is more suited, and more it's deep. You know, most You listen to these man on the street interviews. You know, people don't want to listen to deep. They want to listen to
short and
entertaining. You know, what's going on with Snooki? What's going on with the Kardashians? You know, they don't care about a business show or a tech show or a education show. It's not their ballywick at that point. And I don't want to use that word too much. You know, I think over time, as the mobile devices worldwide become better with, you know, having more bandwidth allowances and also, you know, more readily available, I think we're going to see more streaming. But still, the high majority of people are, you know, a big majority of the people are still just downloading and then listening later.
We make the two calculations differently because on our platform, these are two different technologies. But
right.
Apart from that, I mean, the ways people consume content varies wildly, and it's still changing. So it's an exciting space to be in. We have some ideas about the future, about what's going to happen with car systems, for instance. I think car systems are obviously going to be, well, they need to be streaming. That's what I think. I mean, you cannot, if you think of a car stereo, like connected to your phone, and you always want to have the library of podcasts and up to date into your phone. And what happens if you're driving and you forgot to, or you want to listen to some specific show? I mean, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
You need to be able to stream that, and people, it's a convenience factor.
Yeah.
I think that streaming, has a convenience factor that greatly surpasses download. The problem today is just bandwidth that is not readily available, and it's very expensive in so many countries in the world. But it's I think it's inevitable that we'll move more towards streaming.
I agree.
That's it.
And
Francesco, do you see on your platform more people listening to content that's on Spreaker, in Spreaker apps and on your website than you do in iTunes? Or what's the proportion between those two?
So on our apps, we have the total listening hours. That is some piece of data that we don't have on, of course, with downloads through iTunes and stuff. So it's always tough to compare. I mean, iTunes is probably the number one source for all the downloads that we have on Spreaker easily. I mean, 70% of the downloads come through RSS feed that have gone through iTunes or synchronized through iTunes. But I mean, honestly, I don't know if these should count as, real listens. We've been talking about this. These are downloads for us. Are people accessing this content? I don't really know. So when we tell about our data, we tend to focus more on the streaming component. Okay. And I don't know if I'm answering your question here. I can give you some details on how people access our streams. As of today, it's probably 30 to 31, 32% of people that access this from the web browser, whether it's mobile or it's a desktop web browser. 35 to 36% of people that access this through mobile apps, our mobile apps or branded mobile apps that we've done for users. And the rest, which is probably another 35%, if I made 34% if I made my calculations correctly, is from widgets on third-party websites. And here we know a lot of data, how long the sessions are. I mean, that's really very interesting data that we can build upon, right? Apart from that, I tell you that we have probably the same numbers today. Not the same numbers, but 60% of our session starts or plays come from streaming, and 40% come from downloads. And with downloads, we have no idea. I can tell you the total terabytes of downloads for a month, and since most of the files that we serve are 128 kilobits, I can give you roughly an idea of the downloading hours, but I don't really know if these hours are ever listened to by anybody. I think so. I really think they are, but I think there is a problem with the reporting back of the data on our side.
Yeah, the way we were able to mitigate that portion, Francisco, and the only way you really can is through surveys. And this is, Rob, you know, this is going back to surveys, but it's a survey that we do as an audience survey. You know, we basically say, how are you listening? And able to determine then, all right, are they, you know, are they a downloader? And are they, and if, you know, if you get the right sampling right, you can pretty much tell how many of those folks that are downloading are actually listening. The good thing about iTunes is if they haven't listened for 3 to 5 episodes, iTunes stops.
Yeah, it stops downloading.
And it stops downloading. And so you know that there has been an action that's happened if you see that IP again and again. So that does give you some indication as well of how many people are actively listening to the episode once it's been downloaded. So, and I don't hope that Apple never removes that, because that's a big tipper when it comes to being able to tell, you know, if there's someone actively usually, you know, that's listening to that download.
So it sounds like, you know, if you were to contrast what's happening on iTunes versus Spreaker, it's almost opposite, right? I mean, if I look at the numbers that I've seen on iTunes, it's like 75% download and about 25% streaming. And I don't know, Todd, is that consistent with what you're seeing on iTunes? But I just heard Francesco say it was almost 60% streaming on his apps and website and about 40% on iTunes.
You would expect that, though, with a Spreaker-based show. You would expect the app usage to be higher.
So I mean, I think 35% of the listening hours, let's talk about streaming, right? So 35%, so more than one third of the total listening hours that we do are live content.
Right.
And live content cannot be downloaded and served later.
Right.
And that's why we tend to be skewed towards towards streaming in general. Plus, of course, we were born and we're still consider ourselves as a different kind of platform, not the typical podcasting platform. We're trying to do a lot of for traditional podcasters, but we want to enable them to do, I mean, something more, something that if you want to think of it, goes more in the direction of radio than traditional podcast. And live is one of these components, but there's other. And so I think it makes sense that we have more streaming than downloads.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. One thing too is, you know, you've got the recording apps as well for iOS and Android and the web, so that that helps in the creation process. But you guys are also doing custom apps. How's the custom app stuff going?
It's going well. I think at the last count we had a few hundred. Yeah, a few hundred. Yesterday I got a number just for the Android platform, which was like 120 or something, and we're probably at the same on iOS. Our custom app is like really simple. We just enable our users to create their own branded presence on the app stores. We also publish the app for them. They pretty soon figure out that it's a hard job to get downloads for this app because the app store is more crowded than the iTunes podcast store.
Yeah.
So if you think it's hard to get downloads for your podcast, well, it's even harder to get downloads for your app. But it's I think nonetheless it's good for a number of our users because it's a branded presence. It's something you need to have if you're, let's say, a marketer, if you're a professional. The same way you have a website, you also need to have some kind of app presence on the App Store, and this is a cheap and inexpensive way to get there and have content up there. So it's going pretty well.
One thing that one of the folks in the chat room asked, and it's something that we talked about the last time you were on, is Daniel says, Todd, you got to ask him to ping the RSS media URL for stats. So it's basically the same type of deal where we'd love to be able to start measuring Spreaker like we do Stitcher and the other folks. So, you know, if you guys get to the point where you get a few extra CPU cycles, we'd love to be able to help you make
I don't want to disclose too much right now, but we're going in that direction. I mean, we're born as a hosting platform. So we always thought about content being generated on our platform or originally posted on our platform. And then from our platform, it goes around all the other platforms that we support as a distribution channel. And so, for instance, recently we announced the fact that we're also getting back from many of these distribution channels their own stats, so you can always have a central dashboard on Spreaker where you can see how your show is going on YouTube, for instance, because we allow you to export a video with your show, collect the stats back, and put everything together in a single chart. So that's a reason why we have this problem. We don't think of pinging third-party services because we think of ourselves as a central point where you want to host your content. Okay, we give you the storage, we give you the bandwidth, put your content here, and then from here, grab the feed and distribute it elsewhere. This being said, in the past few months, we have discovered, I mean, we realized that actually our company...
Oh, I think we lost him.
Deals with the... Sorry.
We lost you for just a second. So you...
Okay.
We lost you when you said we realize our company is...
Two different souls.
Oh.
Yeah. On one side, and that's where we think we're strong and we're very well positioned, we are dealing with content producers. But on the other side, a lot of people think that we also might be interesting as a distribution platform because... I mean, our app is out there. We're creating a brand. We have, of course, a listener base, and they want to use us also as an additional distribution platform. And so we're going after this. And the first thing that we did was to separate the single app that we had on Android because this was our first test, and split it in two. So now we have two apps on the App Store. One is called Spreaker Studio on Google Play, sorry, not on the App Store. And Spreaker Studio is an app targeted to content creators and just does just one thing. It allows you to create content, audio content, whether live or pre-recorded, post it, get your stats, everything for the content producer. And we're going to evolve the other part of the application, Spreaker Radio or Spreaker Podcast Radio. We're going to make it into a general podcasting app. So we will not only have our content on that app, but also content that is hosted elsewhere. So something similar to Stitcher, just to give you an idea, with some tweaks, of course. We want to do something unique, but it will be an app where everyone can be, even if they don't host their content on Spreaker. And we're doing this on all the platforms. So in a few weeks, I think mid-March, we're coming up with a studio app for iOS. So the split will be done and we'll start doing the same thing on iOS and we'll do the same for desktop. And I think this is really interesting because it allows us to focus on each specific app on the specific target of people that we want to use that app. When we had only one app, both for content consumers and content producers, it was always limiting because if you did something more interesting or for the content producers, you had the side effect to make the app more complicated to use for the content consumers. So we're slow in the development. Now that we have totally separated the two worlds, we can be faster in implementing new things. And I think this is my answer to the listener who was it, Dan, that
right.
Made the question. Instead of like hosting the stuff to Spreaker, if you're just using Spreaker as a secondary way of distribution, and thinking that Spreaker should ping your primary way of distribution, well, we'll just put it the other way around. We'll just use your primary way of distribution for distributing everything so you get pinged. And if you want, you can also consider moving to Spreaker if you want to consider the benefit of using the distribution, the hosting part of Spreaker. But we'll just separate it. And it will take some time, but we're going that direction.
couple of the things that are in the list here, and there was another question on the chat room, and we'll get to that in a minute. But you guys are going to be at New Media Expo and Podcast Movement?
Yep, both of them.
Good. So two totally different types of events, but I think both are going to be great. So I'm looking forward to catching up with you at NMX. And also,
I'm
you guys
not
are
sure I will be there.
Oh, okay.
Definitely, we will be. Yeah.
So so the New Media Europe thing is that. How much traction has that show gotten?
I'm not one of the organizers. We're a sponsor, right?
Yeah. So have you heard of how they're doing? I was just kind of curious.
The exhibition is scheduled for September 12 and 13, if I'm not mistaken. I remember mid-September. There's a lot of interest. Of course, Europe is a smaller market than the US, and this New Media Expo thing is just for a specific part of Western Europe. I think they're getting interesting traction in the UK and in Germany and in the Scandinavian countries. Probably less in Southern Europe and Eastern European countries, but they're doing pretty well, actually. And they have we're like 6 or 7 months before the show, and they already have announced a lineup of speakers. This doesn't happen that often. So probably when we're in June or July, the program would be final, and I'm sure it would be a great show. I don't know much about the details because we're not involved with the organization. We're just sponsoring it.
Yeah, I got you. Rob, I'll kind of turn this over to you here for a few minutes.
So Daniel J. Lewis is asking about the relationship with the iHeartRadio folks, with Spreaker. What's the status on that, Francesco?
Well, nothing has changed. I don't know what's the meaning of the word relationship. We're still integrating the two platforms. We're still giving all our users the options to be included on or be considered for being included into the iHeartRadio application. Last year, it's been actually almost a year and a half that the promotion where users got a free pass for being included on iHeartRadio expired, but users can still apply and be there. I think we have north of 1,200 shows now that were syndicated and made it to the iHeartRadio platform, and that's all we know. Sometimes we speak with the guys. Of course, we see the evolution as consumers, the evolution of the app on their side. I think in the latest iteration of their evolution of the app, talk content in general has lost some of the prominence of the application, and that's been that was a little bit of a bummer probably for the whole independent podcasting community. But we see their figures on our back end and of course on our data, and they're still strong. I mean, they're still a pretty good distribution platform for our podcasters.
Yeah, and I think what about a month ago or so, you announced that you had a relationship with YouTube, that you were pushing shows over to YouTube as well. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, this is basically a technical integration, but at some point we just thought, if you think about audio, specifically music, I think YouTube is still the number one platform for distribution of music, and even though it's video, of course, but it's probably the number one place where musicians and bands and even, I mean, non-professional people distribute their music. And so we were thinking, hey, this could be an interesting distribution channel for talk content and podcasters as well. But in order for it to work, we need to be able to collect that data and into the whole package of statistics that we have in Spreaker. Our reasoning is that so we help our users grow and distribute the content wherever they want, and we want them to help them monetize in order to monetize. They need to be able to report their. I know that Todd doesn't like this word, but for lack of better wording that comes to my mind, their impressions or their play count, from wherever it comes from. Okay, so what if someone finds that an episode that they post on YouTube has, I don't know, a few thousand of plays over the a temporal time frame of a few months? I mean, isn't worth getting back, knowing this and being able to package all this into a single report? And that's what we did. So we basically already had in place a way for users to push their audio files to YouTube in the form of video episodes. So we create on the fly a video with a waveform and some metadata that they can post in their YouTube channel. All we ask is, okay, connect your Spreaker account to YouTube and then you can start pushing the stuff. We just completed the loop by periodically pulling YouTube APIs and getting back play counts and all the stats that they give back to us and integrating them into our dashboard.
Yeah, I've known people that have posted audio to YouTube, but I just really didn't realize that many people were doing it. I always kind of considered, to be honest with you, I always personally considered it a little bit weird to send audio to YouTube. But if they're getting plays, I guess that's all that counts, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big advocate of being platform agnostic.
Right.
You just need to, if you want to grow, you need to have your content everywhere.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I just I'd never put my audio on YouTube. I waited till I had video to put, you know, the content on YouTube. I think it's an important platform, but a listen's a listen. You know,
that's, yeah. I mean, if you get for any episode, even though 100 extra listens from YouTube, I mean, it's free.
Yeah.
Why not do it? And it might happen that it's the platform that gives you a break and people discover stuff on YouTube just because you posted it. So,
right.
I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I think that the big question about YouTube, and we've talked about YouTube a lot on this show over the years, is how do we make that platform better for audio and what kind of content plays best over there? And the history has been shorter form content, right? And video. So, I guess the bigger question gets back to is maybe that's the answer, right? But maybe audio will find a place over there. The more audio that's put in there, maybe YouTube will adjust their model a little bit to make it a better platform for audio too. And maybe that's the long-term play for Google in the podcasting space, is to carve out a piece of YouTube that's devoted to audio. I'm just speculating at this point.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I have a very a much different approach, actually. I think that...
We lost him again.
Wow. I was like, this is going to be good. And then I turned my head and hopefully he'll come back.
Yeah, we lost you.
A few seconds.
Yeah, said we have a different approach and then we lost you.
Okay, sorry. I was just saying that I don't think it makes much sense, especially with audio, to think of a platform and develop content specifically for that platform. And for the simple reason that, okay, iTunes on the side, I mean, there's not a single platform there where you can make a living from, okay? So I mean, why don't we take the opposite approach? We just develop content, which is great content, and we push it all over all the platforms that are out there. So instead of having just a single distribution channel,
right,
and ignoring all the others, you get a little piece of everyone. It's not perfect. I am the first one to admit that. I mean, a Spreaker podcast made with Spreaker pushed on YouTube. I mean, it doesn't look that great. If I did something specifically for YouTube with production, of course, with images and video, it would look much better. But again, it's a zero effort. Yep. I just have to push a button once, and then it goes automatically. Yep. Why not? And just works.
Yep, makes sense. The I think I've always, from the very beginning, been a bit advocate of being everywhere you can be. You know, as wide as possible. You know, there are some platforms. There's some platforms that, or some producers that are changing that thought process, but you know, they have a business reason to do so. I think then that's, you know, the challenge obviously is to keep content, this space growing. We have to make sure we can get the content creators paid. You know, that's going to be the ongoing challenge for the near future. And it's been the challenge for the past 10 years, but, you know, as the space grows, then as more inventory comes into it, it's going to kind of solve itself. You know, I get podcasters today that don't want any advertising. Just love to do the, you know, I have a couple of shows that are perfect for some ads, and they said, we're not interested. And, you know, they do very well. They could make a couple thousand dollars a month, and they basically say no. And to me, it kind of shocks me when they say no, but, you know, they just, that's just what they like to do. They don't need the money, I guess. But let's hear what else too. I know. And when I had, after we had talked, or after the last interview we had with you, I went over and listed my show on Spreaker. I signed up for the $49 or whatever it was, the base plan, to be able to have my podcast sucked in and you guys just pull the feed. Has that helped you guys growth at all with opening that up?
The you mean having your show on the platform?
I'm saying, have you guys been able to grow your base of users by the syndication portion? You talked a little bit about it.
Yeah, it worked and it's still working. We have so the rationale behind that is that we want to make easy for podcasters that want to consider Spreaker as their new home platform to ingest, import all their content immediately, because we actually download the content and we put it on our CDN. But we understand that we can also be interesting as a pure distribution play because of the higher radio deal. And by the way, in order to go on higher radio, you need to have your files physically on Spreaker. And we saw that a lot of people took advantage of that. And you can also do that, with the free plan. It all comes down on how much archive you want to have. The big difference between the free and the paid plans, if you just use the feeds, is the archive size. And it's worked. I mean, it helped us to grow a lot in terms of content that we have on our platform. And it actually sparked the idea, since there's a lot of people who actually use this as an extra distribution channel, and they don't want to pay for the extra storage, so for buying, I mean, let's say that they have a terabyte of storage somewhere else, and they want to have the full archive on Spreaker as well, they need to buy another terabyte of storage from us, and it doesn't really make much sense. What we can do to turn this into a win-win situation for both, and we thought of opening Spreaker as a peer distribution platform as well. This one was part of the idea.
Gotcha. Did you guys implement redirects for folks that were leaving too? Did you guys get that set up, or where's the status on that?
No, that's all set up. We worked a lot on the feed customization in the past few months. Of course, this was a request that came from the podcaster audience. So, I mean, let's say that you start your show on Spreaker and you have a big library on Spreaker and you submit our feed to iTunes. Now we allow you to leave, so we can. We always allow you to leave, but now we made it particularly easy to redirect the feed to your new provider and basically start over somewhere else.
Yeah, we never love to see customers go, but we know that they do from time to time. Even us, we have people come and go.
I think that being upfront about this and allowing them to leave is a great sales point. And
right.
You can say, yeah, you're free to go whenever you want. This is how you do it. It's all set up from since the beginning. Just push this button and you can move to another provider. It would be good if it were very easy for everyone to accept incoming users.
Yep.
I mean, I joke with this from time to time with the guys at Block Talk Radio, because some of our user base kind of overlaps, of course.
Yeah.
And we have like these guys that constantly switch and make like a few months on one platform, and then they go back to the other platform, and then they go back to this platform, and they've bounced here and there. So yeah, there's a lot of exchange both directions.
That's kind of funny.
I think that whole concept of freedom of movement, I think, is good, because I think it fosters a positive reputation in the space. People feel good about a platform that's open and free like that. You know, Todd, I think you would 100% agree.
Oh, yeah.
There are some platforms that have limited that kind of movement.
They've not limited it. They've made it impossible.
Yeah, and it gives a bad impression of the company, you know.
But yet, Rob, those folks that are doing that, the several companies that come to top of mind, I won't say publicly, that don't basically lock you in.
Yeah.
Man, it's just like, you know, a lot of people go, and here's the sad thing. I migrate probably 20 to 30 shows a week from some of those platforms, and it's all requires an email to Apple to get their feed redirected, because they basically there's no response. I have no idea where some of these, they're U.S. based owner. They have a U.S. based corporation, but I have no idea, and no one knows who even operates it or who owns it. We kind of have an idea. It's offshore. But
there's no contact.
No face to the business. So, and they advertise heavily, so they must be doing well, because they advertise a lot. So they must be doing enough business to do that.
Yep, that's true.
Well, I think it's cool. We talked about Twitter bombing today. We've talked about your guys' growth. We talked about your apps, the recording apps, of course, and the live streaming portion of the business. So it sounds like you guys are continuing to truck ahead. So how much longer then is it before you leave for Italy?
1 week.
Oh, 1 week. So have the movers already come? Have you packed up?
I actually packed up last week. I'm in my kitchen, and you don't see many. The white background is probably all there is. I did the moving myself, actually, last week with the van from Berlin to Bologna and back. It was not a good idea.
Oh.
But I had to go back to Bologna because I had some meeting for some kind of audit there at our accountancy firm. So I said, okay, I need to get a flight to Bologna and I need to move at the same time. Why don't I drive down there?
How does the border crossings go with a truckload of furniture and stuff?
Well, we don't have borders anymore.
Okay, okay, because EU, yeah.
In the EU Union. But again, I mean, there's police, and you're not supposed to do that, at least in Italy. Because I also did some, move some stuff from the office, so I had like literally 4 or 5 monitors, like 5 or 6 laptops and other computers, and I did things quickly, dirty, and I had no documents. So I totally looked like a thief. And if they had stopped me, it would have been tough. Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. You know, we don't think about those things. You know, I guess if I was to pack up and go to Europe or Canada or something, yeah, you have to think about all that stuff. You know, and having spent 24 years in the military before, and the packers would just show up and put it in crates, and then I would get to wherever I would go next, and a couple weeks later they'd show up with my crates. A couple of times with not everything in them, but at least it was no hassle for me. So I've been pretty lucky. I've never really had to do a full move on my own. But one thing is, everyone should move every 3 years. You know why? You get rid of all that stuff you don't need. You know, it lets you purge, you know, so.
I don't know, Todd. Every 3 years, that's pretty frequent.
Well, you know.
I want to go through that every 3 years.
Well, if you do go through it every 3 years, then you get rid of the stuff that you don't need, and you keep your.
But I can do that without having to move, though.
Most people don't.
I think it's impossible. I mean, stuff always grows. I moved here in Berlin. I moved to Berlin 2 years, roughly 2 years ago. And I always, I took flights with just one bag every time. And I did back and forth a few times probably in the last 2 years from my other house in Italy. So I thought that I just needed one bag to move. Well, my bag and my girlfriend's bag to move everything that I had here down to Italy. And it took me a full van. It was really, really bad in 2 years. And I don't know, it just grew here.
Exactly. Yeah.
So one thing I wanted to ask, are you guys still venture funded, or how is your guys' I couldn't remember if I ever asked that before.
We are venture funded. I mean, like on the lower scale, we raised money from seed investors originally in Italy before we opened to the US. And yeah, we raised 1 million euros in three tranches from 2010 to 2012. And that's all we raised.
Well, you're still here. That's the main thing. It's most folks that get that kind of money, if they're either they either are surviving or gone by now. So you guys have done a good job.
Thank you. I mean, we want to grow more, and we think there's exciting times ahead, really exciting times for the podcaster community. And you guys know it. I mean, you've seen the news. So it's good that we're able to be here and actually in growth mode at the right time.
You know, it's funny because, one of the calls I did last week, the firm that I talked to was a different type of media firm or media buyer. They were largely representing national agencies and or not national agencies, national brands. And so now, what we're the calls I'm starting to see now are discovery calls. Basically, how big's the space? You know, what is the scale, you know, who are the people creating the content, you know, so it's kind of interesting that we're now starting to teach these other, you know, these new groups about the space. And, luckily we've got that message refined. So I think it is a good time for the podcasting space and the brand advertisers move in. The key will be is whether or not the CPM rates are going to be able to follow and stay within the, you know, the reasonability range instead of the stupidity range, and what some of the stuff has been coming out from, you know, the B2B player, the direct response folks. So, time will tell on how this works out. But the space is on fire right now for sure. And, you know, I'm going through the process of hiring three people, and it's crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot of new companies that are going to jump into this space, and as we saw just even last week with the announcement of Slate launching their new network, and there's just a lot more talk about brand advertisers, and I think as we move into the New Media Expo coming, there's just going to be a lot more talk about how the radio side and streaming side is going to integrate.
The question, though, then, Rob, really becomes, is all these groups, is there enough content to go around? They're all going to be fighting over the same content. And it's, I knew this day would come. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, but, I mean, no, that's exactly, I mean, what shows, I mean, because all these groups are going to want to have shows that have big audiences.
Yeah,
right?
And there's not that many.
So, and so there's going to be a lot of people and that are kind of living in the LA space that are going to be tapping into celebrities that have big followings and social media trying to build shows around that or YouTube celebrities. I mean, you're already seeing it happen right now.
The key word there is try.
Yeah. You're not always going to be successful.
Right.
But we've talked about on this show, but, yeah. but, But I think that there is opportunity out there, and there is untapped talent that can come into this space and hopefully expand the base of audience. And I think that's the big challenge as we move into 2016 and beyond is how do we grow the overall scale of on-demand audio consumption? And I think that the only way that's going to happen is through content.
Yeah. Well, we are already at an hour and 36 minutes, so we need to be wrapping here. Okay. Rob, any ideas on what we've got on tap for next week?
Not at this time, but follow our Twitter accounts, and we'll keep everybody updated on what's coming next week.
Francesco, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. It was great to get caught up and, basically hear what you guys are got going on. So it's exciting to know that it's not a trend. We're seeing good growth and lots of new voices come into the space, I guess, for a better word.
Yep. Yeah, sure. Well, thank you for having me. And, we'll meet in person at one of the conferences lined up for the next few months. Exciting times.
Well, yep. You're going to have to make the trip across the pond and either come to either NMX or either Podcast Movement, one or the other.
Yeah, I was thinking NMX, but now for some personal reasons, I'm not sure I can do it, but I'm definitely aiming for Podcast Movement, there in person.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, folks, both events are great. Of course, New Media Expo is right around the corner. You will see on our website at newmediashow.com, you'll see a banner there. And get your tickets. And Rob and I are, I guess we firmed up the session that you and I and Rob Walsh are doing. Yes. So looking forward to that State of the Podcasting session that we do every year and sharing some new insights. I got to get Angelo digging into the data. I have some ideas on some things I'm going to share, but should be a good session and a good show. It's a monster show. So when folks are planning, it's you come healthy and hydrated because it's going to be 4 days of nonstop, really not make it a week. Just arrive on Sunday and leave out on Saturday. That's the best way to do that show.
Yep.
So
get your walking shoes.
Yeah. it's not a place to come when you have just bought brand new shoes. You will pay dearly for it. But everyone, Todd at newmediashow.com, or you can email Rob at newmediashow.com. You can find me on Twitter at Geek News. Rob is at...
At Rob Greenlee. That's two E's. Yep.
And, of course, Francesco, what's your Twitter account? I don't think I had it on your lower third.
It's The Basque. Yeah, it's not there. It's
The Boss.
P-H-E. B-A-S-K.
Yeah, The Boss. Yeah, The Boss.
B-A-S-K. Yeah.
Oh, I like that. The Boss. The Boss. Oh, nice play on words. I like that. All right, folks. We'll see everyone next time. Everyone take care. Thanks for being here. And thanks to the audience. If we missed any questions, we apologize. But thanks for being online with us today. Until next week, we'll see everyone. Take care. Thank you. From Hawaii.
Bye-bye.
Aloha. Bye.
Bye-bye.